The other thing that you find in the archaeological record is that humans are long and tall and strong, and they keep all their teeth, and their bones are disease-free until you hit agriculture. And then suddenly everybody shrinks 6 inches and they lose their teeth and their bones are riddled with disease.
This is Peak Moment. We are living at a peak of human innovation, information, wealth, and health. But we're also at a peak of population and consumption, with rising temperatures and declining resources fueled by cheap oil and gas. Peak Moment Television, bringing you examples of positive responses to energy decline and climate change through local community action.
Hi, welcome to Peak Moment. I'm Janaea Donaldson. My guest today is Lierre Keith, who's a writer and author and radical feminist. Her book is The Vegetarian Myth, and I need to tell you, Lierre, thank you for being with us. And Robin and I have read aloud maybe a handful of books together, and yours is one of those few. This has been riveting.
Thank you.
Well, it is both, you know, some of the writing is lyrical, it's passionate, but what you are saying is so critical for us to hear now, many of us. Because what you're saying, let me see if I say it right, that the vegetarian way of eating, which many people are turning to because of climate change and so on, doesn't nurture the human being, doesn't nurture our bodies, and this is destroying the planet.
Right.
Have it right?
Yeah.
So let's unpack those two and talk to us about why isn't a vegetarian diet, which sounds like the right way to go, why isn't it good for people?
Well, there's a human template that needs certain nutritional elements, and they are not provided by a vegetarian diet. Well, you can go back 4 million years to the very beginning of the human race, and there is no question that we were hunters. This is what we ate for literally 4 million years. And it's the reason we have really big brains. We have the largest brain of any primate, and we have the smallest digestive tract, which is to say, how are you going to feed that brain? I mean, our brains use 25% of the energy, our energy needs. And you're not going to get that out of plants. There just isn't enough energy. So it's quite clear that we must have been eating meat to get brains that are this large. And, you know, the other thing that you find in the archaeological record is that humans are long and tall and strong, and they keep all their teeth, and their bones are disease-free until you hit agriculture. And then suddenly everybody shrinks 6 inches, and they lose their teeth, and their bones are riddled with disease.
Whoa.
And we have a concept, the diseases of civilization. There is no such thing as the diseases of hunter-gatherers.
Let me back up for a second here. Part of how you got into this is you yourself were a vegan for 20 years. So you're looking at not anything from any animals, right?
Right.
So I fill that in with a story as well. I mean, it's not just that template, but you were trying. Why be a vegan for you?
Well, I started very young. I was 16, and I met another vegan. At that age, you know, you're very idealistic and you're very impressionable. Mm-hmm. And I was somebody who, even at that age, was very impassioned about, you know, saving the planet and all these political concerns about oppression. And it all comes together when you learn about veganism, because here you can, you know, stop oppressing animals and you can stop hurting the earth and you can feed hungry people. And there's this whole, it makes a total picture. You get this complete plan if you just eat this way. And at age 16, I had no counter information, and I thought it seemed like it made sense. And so.
And it's wonderful and it's honorable and it's laudable, and you can do just that, and it affects much more than just yourself.
Yeah, except none of it's true. And that's the problem. None of it's true. And so I believed that for 20 years. And the problem was that, of course, I kept accumulating information. I didn't stop there. And so all the counter information that indeed I was gathering, I couldn't look at. Because, I mean, one of the things about being a vegan is that it's not just what you eat. It becomes who you are. And that makes it really hard to examine new information. Because it's a threat. It feels like you're threatening who you are. And so every time I got information that actually was different than what I believed, I had to set it aside. So I was living with this tremendous sort of gap in my consciousness that it was really hard. And eventually, when I had to give up being a vegan, all that information, I was finally able to really examine it and embrace it more fully. But it's a long, hard process, and I know that it's very painful for most people. And, you know, there's a whole generation of us now who have been through this. I mean, we tried it didn't work, our health collapsed, and then we had to find something new.
Then there's something in animal meals that we don't get just with grains and so on.
Well, it's nutrient-dense food. So, for start, you get the complete proteins. And the problem with protein that comes from plant sources is that it's wrapped in cellulose. And we have no way to digest cellulose. You know, we're not ruminants.
Yeah, that's true.
We've got the one stomach. We don't have that vat of bacteria that can do it for us. So we can't eat grass. We have no way to digest it. So we can't get to the protein. That's why it's called poor quality protein, because we can't get to it. And it's not complete. So right away, you've got the protein problem. And so it's not really assimilated by humans. And then there's the fats. There are fat-soluble nutrients that you cannot get from plants. Vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin K2, vitamin E. You cannot get these from plants. You've got
not
to
at
eat
all,
them. No, they don't exist. They don't exist in plant foods.
And they're essential.
And they are essential. You will die without them. So this is, you know, and they are important for just every range of human biological function you've got, especially your brain, you know, but everything. So you're going to end up with these deficiencies. Another problem is CoQ10, which is only available in meat. Heme iron is only available in meat. And then the fat itself is actually a really important, you know, your brain is almost 80% fat. You've got to eat it.
So if we call somebody a fathead, we are being accurate.
Yes, we are. And that really should be a compliment, the highest compliment. Yeah. It's not, but it should be. Yeah. So then the other problem, so there's all the things you're not getting, but then there's all the things you're getting too much of with an agricultural diet. Essentially, it's way too much sugar. So every day, you can call it complex carbohydrate if it makes you happy, but at the end of the day, it's all just sugar.
Yeah, because the starches that are in our grains, right, break down quickly into sugars.
Yeah.
So then what's wrong with that?
Well, it's way too much insulin. It requires this insulin response. So, for instance, your brain can only function at a very, very small range of sugar, glucose, blood glucose. So if you put in too much, it's a biological emergency. And then your pancreas has to secrete all this insulin, which will grab it out of your bloodstream and sock it away, usually in your fat cells, as fast as it can, or you'll die. So it's an emergency response.
Wow.
And this is not what insulin was meant for. So every time you eat one of those meals, you're demanding that your body produce that much insulin, and then there's a whole cascade of effects that happen from having that constant blood sugar roller coaster. You know, obvious things like diabetes and hypoglycemia, but on into, for instance, cancer. What we know about cancer is two things. One, insulin provokes the growth of cancer cells.
Really?
Number two, what cancer eats is sugar. So you put people on an agricultural diet, they're going to get cancer. This is why cancer is unknown amongst hunter-gatherers. Even until the 1950s, you can read statements in medical journals. Well, we all know the Eskimo don't get cancer. And that's why. They weren't eating agricultural foods.
So your book said that people, the hunter-gatherer tribes, were not only had no cancer, but also no heart disease.
No heart disease, no diabetes, all those diseases, autoimmune diseases, all the chronic degenerative diseases that we are used to thinking of as normal are not normal. There are entire groups of people that never get them. Now those people have been fast disappearing with you know, the onslaught of industrial civilization, but even 100 years ago, you could still find them all over the globe. And so, you know, there's a lot of documentation about usually, you know, various imperialist armies or navies, you know, traveling around, and there's a doctor who's French or English or whatever, and he documents, these people have no cancer. They have no diabetes. Their health is gorgeous. Look at these teeth.
Beautiful.
This is amazing. The broad jaws and the gorgeous facial structure.
Yes.
And so over and over you find these accounts, and, you know, really even until 1950, this was still observed.
Wow.
That these people still existed.
I think that one of the parts that really struck for me was the work of Weston Price.
Absolutely.
The dentist. Yes. Tell us a little bit about it.
Weston Price was a dentist, originally from Canada, but he lived in the United States. And in the 1930s, he had been observing for about 10, 15 years in his dental practice that suddenly there were children whose teeth did not fit. And they had these terrible...
Didn't fit in their mouth.
Yeah, terrible malformations, all kinds of bizarre problems that he had never seen before. And his thesis was that this has something to do with nutrition. Because at that point, corporate America was already beginning to take control of the food supply, and the food supply was being flooded with cheap vegetable oils. So all the animal fats, traditional animal fats, were being removed from the diet, cheap vegetable oil, and lots of white sugar and white flour. And he believed that this was why all of a sudden these terrible dental problems were popping up in young kids. So he decided to test his thesis, and he and his wife, Flora, was a nurse. They traveled the world. They decided they were going to hit every continent, you know, on which humans lived, and try to find at least one group of people that achieved perfect health. And that meant freedom from chronic and degenerative diseases. It meant freedom from mental illness. It meant ease of childbirth generation after generation. So, you know, women go into labor 4 hours later, there's a baby, real easy. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, because of the beautiful bone structure. And so on every continent, he was able to find at least one group of people that met that criteria. So, and no dental, you know, no dental problems, you know, perfect teeth, no cavities. And so he started in Europe, and he went to Switzerland up in the mountains, and he found these people, and he also went to the Outer Hebrides, you know, way off of Scotland, and found another group of people. So they were totally free from what he called the displacing foods of modern commerce.
And I think that's the displacing foods of modern commerce.
And eating their traditional diets, they achieved this perfect health. And so then they spent, you know, years going from continent to continent, traveling, and finding these people and then documenting it. So photography had gotten just good enough that you could travel with it. So they were actually able to take pictures. Another 10 years, it would be too late. Most of these people would have disappeared, or their cultures would have disappeared. But that was the exact moment where photography and, you know, the survival still of traditional peoples, it was just enough overlap that he could document it.
So what did he, what kind of conclusion did he come to?
Well, this is his brilliance, was because the macronutrient ratios are really different. Because people living in, you know, the Outer Hebrides are going to eat something really different than people in Central Africa.
Sure.
But what he realized was that it was the animal fats, especially, that the vitamin A, the vitamin D, the vitamin, and vitamin K had not been discovered yet in the lab. He knew there was a third nutrient, but he didn't know what it was.
Wow.
And he's been proven correct. It was K2. So there were three nutrients that were, very condensed in animal foods, animal fats, because all these people, what was considered sacred were these animal foods. So it was usually something like raw liver or fish eggs, but it's the fattiest part of the animal is the most nutrient dense. Meat is at least 100 times more nutrient dense than vegetable matter, and the organ meats are at least 100 times more nutrient dense than the muscle meat.
Wow.
And in this culture right now, it's complete insanity. Nobody eats organ meats. We throw them out.
Right.
We're eating the stuff that people used to leave for the dogs and the scavengers. That's what we're eating.
Wow.
And we're giving the dogs and the scavengers the good stuff. I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of sense, but those are the most nutrient dense parts of the food. And everywhere around the world that he found these healthy people, those were the foods that they valued above all else. Usually they had sacred ceremonies involved in eating them. And so, that was what he found, and it was the nutrient-dense foods, especially the fat-soluble vitamins, and then a high level of minerals as well. The human body actually can't absorb minerals without the presence of fat.
Really?
Yeah, and this is one of the problems with the low-fat diets, of course, and this is why you're seeing osteoporosis everywhere, and this is one of the problems I ended up with as a vegan, is I have a degenerative disease of the spine, and I can tell you that's how I did it. Now I understand what happened. So, but anyway, that's the update on the Weston Price stuff. So it's great nutritional information out there. There's a wonderful group of people that have revived Weston Price. His book was taught. It was a basic text at Harvard at the med school for years. And then the sugar industry took over and his book was taken right out of the curriculum. Literally, the sugar industry said, you can't do this. And they took his book out.
Whoa. So, are we surprised?
No.
Not entirely. But it seems to me that the food industry has stolen good nutrition from us. Because we also, I was raised with, you eat low fat and you eat vegetable fats.
Right.
And this puts a lie to that. I mean, people are still saying the way to lose weight is you have a low fat diet.
Right.
Which means you're starving.
Everything.
Yeah, right.
From your brain on down. People who eat low fat diets have like 4 times the suicide rate. And not just suicide, but violent death and murder rate. So, you know, you're not stable when you don't get enough fat.
The agricultural diet, something like, 80% of the calories, or you said, that people all over the world are getting is coming from cereal grains.
Right.
Why not? I mean, less carbon, you don't have all the cattle, you know, emitting methane. That's what I would say vegetarians are probably saying is going to be better for the planet and better for humans.
Right. What they're using for those statistics is the factory farming model. And I think that we can all agree. I mean, anybody with a beating heart should know that this is just completely, it's on every level, morally, ethically, I mean, spiritually even. I think we all can agree that factory farming has just got to go. Factory farming didn't exist until 1950. And the reason that we have it is because corn became so cheap. So you got to ask about, five previous questions to this. Why did corn get so cheap? Well, the Green Revolution. And what this was is people figured out how to take oil and gas and turn it into nitrogen fertilizer. So when oil and gas were cheap and abundant, it meant that fertilizer was really cheap. And then they also did a lot of plant breeding and now, of course, genetic engineering so that corn could, so that all the plants they grow, they didn't produce anywhere near as much of the cellulotic stalks and the leaves and instead put way more energy into producing the grain itself. Okay. So that's these Green Revolution crops. So put that together with the cheap fertilizer and literally there's this mountain of corn that's produced from the 50s onward. It had nowhere else to go. I mean, it was so cheap. And from that point forward, it made economic sense to take animals off their habitat, off
the
farms,
grass,
and essentially put them in cities. So now they live in concrete, and they're fed corn, which is not their native diet. It kills them. I mean, if you're eating grain-fed beef, you're eating a sick animal. You know, they
corn-fed.
Yeah, corn-fed
beef.
Corn-fed. Yes, absolutely. Grain-fed. Right. Yes, it's the last thing. It's not their native. It kills them, literally. It burns holes in their stomachs. It destroys their livers.
Mm. Which is why we give them antibiotics and
yes,
other stuff.
Yes, exactly. It's the only way that they're going to survive those 60 days.
So we are all eating sick meat.
Yeah, we are. We are. And the reason that that's possible is because of the fossil fuel. So yes, when you do these statistics based on, you know, what happens in a feedlot, it's going to look like, well, all these resources go to this. You know, but to back it up one more step, that's not the reason that corn is being produced. It's not because there's a demand for factory farmed animal products, and this is not an excuse for eating them, but withdrawing from factory farmed meat will not stop a single farmer from overproducing corn. The reason it's being produced is because there are six corporations that control the world food supply. They have a monopoly, and they're able to drive the price of corn below the cost of production. And this means that every year in farm country, these poor farmers have to produce more corn, and they still can't make a profit. So then they have to produce more. And every year there's a bigger surplus, the price goes lower, so then the next year they have to produce even more. So they're on this hideous treadmill. And the number one cause of death right now in farm country is suicide. It's suicide. They're serfs. There's no way for them to ever get ahead.
In my understanding.
And then the government steps in and provides a subsidy to keep them, you know, just enough money so they don't go bankrupt. The corporations do not own the land, and you need to understand why. If they owned the land, they would actually have to pay the farmers a salary. And this way, and they are very upfront about this, they don't have to pay them. They said the farmers will work themselves until they're dead, and we don't have to pay them. The government steps in instead. And this is our tax dollars at work.
Whoa.
It's completely corrupt. That's why there's this mountain of corn. It has nothing to do with, you know, the fact that animals are being tortured in factory farms. So we've had this backwards for about 30 years. And the people who originally wrote the books about this didn't understand it because they're not from Nebraska. And so it looks like it makes sense, but it's not actually accurate. And I got to say, that's the one part of the vegetarian myth that really bears no relation to reality. Some of it at least is true to a certain extent, but this is just completely wrong. And then the other half of that is, well, if you eat this way, you'll feed the hungry people. It's not true. Because it's just like Walmart. I mean, we all get this concept. Walmart comes to town. They sell everything really cheap.
Right.
They drive all the local businesses out.
Right.
And then they have a monopoly. Well, it's the same model. You know, Cargill or Continental, these huge grain. I mean, when I say there are six corporations that control the world food supply, this is not some kind of, you know, not a metaphor. I mean,
this is
literal. For real.
This is very scary.
They control everything. And they can go to places like Mexico and the Philippines and poor countries, and they do what's called agricultural dumping. And that is what causes starvation, because it drives the local farmers off their land. They cannot compete. And groups like Oxfam explain, you know, yes, American corporations can sell grain half the price that local farmers can produce it. So they're driven off their land and into urban squalor. And that's what's causing world hunger. So the last place in the world that you want to put those cheap commodities is near chronically hungry people, because it's destroying those local economies the world over. So again, we've got this part of it backwards.
It's kind of crazy. And it's not truly feeding people.
Yes, right. We've got this other problem, which is that agricultural societies are always on overshoot. And that would include, you know, the current situation. The problem is that as you're drawing down, okay, agriculture is drawdown. And you need to
talk about agriculture.
Right, okay.
Why is that even not healthy?
All right, so you got to understand what agriculture is. In very brute terms, you take a piece of land, you clear every living thing off it, and I mean down to the bacteria, and then you plant it to human use. So this is biotic cleansing, and we all know what
it's
ethnic
like
cleansing
genocide.
Is. Yes, it is, but it's of
biocide.
All life. It's biocide. It's biotic cleansing.
I remember you saying something like a million different organisms in one tablespoon something.
Yes, and that's
like
what we kill when we
moving.
Do agriculture. So in nature, you've got a few different templates, but it's all the same idea, which is a whole bunch of different plants, and they all live a long time, and they all communicate with each other, and they all form a community. And their basic goal is to create more life. And the way they do that is by creating soil, because soil is the basis of land life. So they protect it. So all the material, whether it's trees or plants or whatever, they're protecting the soil from exposure. Their roots literally hold it in place. And then there's all the biological functions of the bacteria and the other microorganisms that either degrade, you know, dead matter, and they make the nutrients available again, and the plants draw it back up. And the other thing that plants do, the perennial plants anyway, the long-lived plants, they have very deep root systems. All the minerals that, you know, make life possible are drawn up from the rock that is our planet by the roots of those plants.
Okay.
And now that's the basic sort of template for life on Earth. So you have all these different plants working together, creating more soil. The problem with agriculture is that it wipes all those plants out, and you're only planting one or two plants, and these are annuals, they're not perennials. So they're short-lived.
So you have to keep wiping off every year.
Single year. And this is a war. And this is why, you know, Iowa alone uses the energy equivalent of 4,000 Nagasaki bombs every year. And I say this is
in fertilizer?
Yes. Yeah, that's how much. And other kinds of energy.
Ah.
Other kinds of energy use. You need those big machines to get out there and clear it. the world does not want to be a monocrop. I mean, nature does not recognize this as a living system. And she does everything in her power to repair that wound. Agriculture is a wound. So it's a war every single year. You're driving out the plants and the animals that need a home. I mean, this is a nice way to say extinction. And this is what agriculture has done around the globe or out of continents, okay? It's been drawdown of soil, of species, of water, and it's been 10,000 years we've trashed the planet.
I remember thinking about the Fertile Crescent isn't fertile. I mean,
it's a desert. Yeah.
You know,
it was cedar trees so thick sunlight never touched the ground. And this is my favorite Derek Jensen quote where he says, you know, forests precede us and deserts dog our heels. Mm-hmm. And that is the path of agriculture around the globe. And it's, we've hit the end. I mean, there are no more continents. Mm-hmm. We've been out of soil since 1950 and we are on, you know, we're at the cliff. The human race is at the cliff. And that's probably the main reason that I wrote that book is because the people who care the most are environmentalists. And even of them, I would say the most impassioned people are probably the vegans. And the values are not the problem. So justice, mm-hmm. sustainability, mm-hmm. compassion. Mm-hmm. We have the right values and we've got the passion to institute them. But this vegetarian vegan diet is, we've been pointed in the wrong direction for 30 years. And I want people to understand the real damage that's being done to this planet and what it's going to take to really repair it. Because we are going to have to give up agriculture if this planet has any hope.
How can we give up agriculture and still feed the 7 billion?
Nothing we can do is going to feed those 7 billion. Nothing that we do. So the question is, are we going to have a soft landing or are we going to have a crash? If we could get all the institutions that rule the planet on board, we could have a soft landing. This would not be that difficult. I don't see evidence that we are going to is the problem. I think that that the privileged are going to hang on to this until the very last moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that things are going to be very ugly. I hope that things will be different. And, you know, part of my goal in writing this book and my subsequent book is to get people to understand. First, we have to identify the real problem. And then we have to identify, what solutions would actually match the scale of the problem? And people get very upset when you talk about population, but we don't need to be upset. There's really only two reasons that we have overpopulation, and one is global capitalism, and the other is patriarchy. What we know about, you know, people's reproductive lives is that when they're poor, they have more children, and that when women cannot control their own fertility, they have more children than they want to. Mm-hmm. The number one thing you can do to reduce the birth rate is to teach a girl to read. Because when you give women just even a little bit of empowerment, then they can control their reproductive lives. And that is the number one thing. So we're all going to have to be feminists to save the planet. You know, gosh, what a shame. We've got to stop the rich from stealing from the poor. So we're going to have to be against global capitalism. Well, honestly, these are things we should be doing anyway, because justice should call us to these. But if we could do those things, indeed the birth rate would drop pretty quickly. I mean, we're all going to die one day. We just need to reproduce at less than replacement levels.
So what you're doing is you're doing a decline. That's your soft landing.
That's the soft landing. The soft landing.
And meanwhile, having to shift our agriculture away from these huge annual grains.
Right.
And
repair the planet. Well, this is, you know, my slogan is repair, restore, rejoin. So we have to repair the forests and the grasslands. And then we have to restore the animal cohort that should live there. And my big passion right now is the grasslands of North America, the prairie, that we need to restore the prairie. Now, I'll walk you through one scenario here. Given enough rainfall in a lot of areas, you can take 1 acre of land and you can do two different things. On that acre, you can wipe everything off it, so drive everybody off, kill everybody. And I mean, like, literally down to that bacteria, you know, down to the little tiny microorganisms that are making it all possible. Kill everything. Plant to corn, dump a whole bunch of fertilizer on it. A whole bunch of that fertilizer is going to run off, take the topsoil with it into the water, kill the local river, all the fish. Everybody's dead, okay? Water table's going to keep dropping. The trees are gone now, too, because they can't reach the water. You're basically looking at a desert, you know, at some point. Mm-hmm. Anyway, with all that corn that you can grow on 1 acre, you can then take it to tortured animals living on concrete, feed them that grain, and at the end of the year, you've got 2 cows that people can eat. Okay. On that acre of land, you can leave it alone.
Yes.
You can still have all the prairie that should be there, all the animals that need to live there. You can have all the mammals, you can have all the reptiles, you can have all the birds. Everybody gets their habitat, which is their home. They get to live there, okay? And leave the grass alone. The cows will eat the grass. So you've got all these animals living, you know, all the plants, everybody's there making a living community. You could come back in 10,000 years and the only difference would be a few more inches of topsoil. So it's a closed loop system. The rivers are in good shape. The water table stays the same.
The soil
life is good. Yeah. And at the end of the year, you've got 2 cows that can feed the same number of people. So one way kills everything. The other thing is a system that could go on forever because it's not a system, it's a living community. So, you know, these are our choices. It's insane.
Woo.
It's insane. We took 60 million bison in this country and turned it into 40 million tortured cows and destroyed the continent in the process. It doesn't even make any sense. But this is the insanity of industrial civilization.
Which actually leads us here in our last 2 minutes, whatever else we haven't said for the wrap up, but points to, I want to remind people, how can they find you?
LeahKeith.com, which would be easy if you could spell my name.
Spell our name for us.
It's LIERRE.
Like Pierre.
Like Pierre with an L. LeahKeith.com.
Okay,
and
good.
You can get my book and everything's there.
Yeah, and I want to say, I mean, this should be required reading.
Oh, thank you.
This should be required reading for every human.
Right. Right.
I mean, for people starting out in eating and environmentalists and people who are concerned about the planet, because you have woven together, like the community you talk about, the land community you talk about, you've woven the political, the bigger picture, political, economic, all the way down to feeding ourselves. I mean, it's really beautiful how you've woven that together.
Well, thank you.
Is anybody turning this around yet in small ways, not on the scale that you're talking about for resistance, but what do you see that's hopeful, that's moving in the right direction?
If we took all the trashed out grasslands across the planet, no, not all, 75% of the world's trashed rangelands, and we could restore them from agriculture back to functioning prairies, you know, with their animal cohorts, even on 75% of the land, within under 15 years, we could sequester all of the carbon that's been released since the beginning of the industrial age. All of the carbon that's been released from since the beginning of the industrial age. So I find that a hopeful thing because, frankly, we just have to get out of the way. Nature will do the work for us. I mean, this planet wants to be a grassland and a forest. It does not want to be an agricultural monocrop. And if we just got out of the way, look up Chernobyl online. People haven't been living there now since the accident. Mm-hmm. And what has happened is just an incredible explosion of the return. There are plural packs of wolves at Chernobyl now. Not like one wolf, plural packs. Nice. All these rare animals and birds have returned. So which is to say that in a really scary way, a nuclear disaster is better for the planet than civilization. Yeah. Because it took all the people off. I shouldn't say all the people because you know who's there is the old women. There were old women who refused to leave their land and they're not hurting anything. So you've got the old women, you've got the animals and that's who's there.
I love the picture.
Yeah.
The healers.
It is. It's the grandmas. Yeah.
Thank you. You're one of them. A little young for that, but we're
on my way.
Honorary. Honorary. Thank
you.
Healing mothers.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you for joining me. This has been enlightening, and I bet you're enlightened too. You're watching Peak Moment, Locally Reliant Living for Challenging Times. My guest is LeahKeith, the author of The Vegetarian Myth. Read it. Join us next time.